So we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 6th canto, 5th chapter, 27, yes. Rinayas, Tribir, Amuktanam, Amimam Shita, Karmanam, Vighata Shreyasaha Papa Lokehor Upayo Pritaha Vinastri Vira Muktanahum Amimam Sita Karmanam Kata Shreyasa Papa Lokeya Rubayo Kritaha Arinahai from the debts Tribihi three Omuktanam a person's not freed Amimam Sita, not considering Karmanam, the path of duty, Vighataha, ruin, Shreyasaha, of the path of good fortune, Papa, O most sinful Nardamuni, Lokayaho of the worlds. Ubayaho both. Kritaha done. Translation. Prajapati Daksha said, my sons were not freed from their three debts. Indeed, they did not properly consider their obligations. O Narada Muni, O personality of sinful action, you have obstructed their progress toward good fortune in this world and the next because they are still indebted to saintly persons, the demigods, and their father. So purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. As soon as a brahmana takes birth, he assumes three kinds of debts, debts to the great saints, debts to the demigods, and debts to his father. The son of a brahmana must undergo celibacy, brahmacharya, to clear his debts to the saintly persons. He must perform ritualistic ceremonies to clear his debts to the demigods. And he must beget children to become free from his debts to his father. Prajapati Daksha argued that although the renounced order is recommended for liberation, one cannot attain liberation unless one fulfills his obligations to the demigods, the saints, and his father. Since Daksha's sons had not liberated themselves from these three debts, how could Narada Muni have led them to the renounced order of life? Apparently, Prajapati Daksha did not know the final decision of the Shastras. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto, 5th chapter, text 41, Devarshi Bhutaptan Rinam Pitrinam Nakinkaro Nayam Rini Naucharajan Saratmana Yakshadanam Shadanjam Katomit Kundam Parithrichakartam. Everyone is indebted to the demigods, to living entities in general, to his family, to the Pittas, and so on. But if one fully surrenders to Krishna, Mukunda, who can give one liberation, even if one performs no yajnas, one is freed from all debts. Even if one does not repay his debts, he is freed from all debts if he renounces the material world for the sake of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose lotus feet are the shelter of everyone. This is the verdict of the Shastra. Therefore, Narada Muni was completely right in instructing the sons of Prajapati Daksha to renounce this material world immediately and take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Unfortunately, Prajapati Daksha, the father of the Haryashvas and Savalashvas, did not understand the great service rendered by Narada Muni. Daksha therefore addressed him as Papa, the personality of sinful activities, and Asadhu, a non-saintly person. Since Narada Muni was a great saint and Vaishnava, he tolerated all such accusations from Prajapati Daksha. He merely performed his duty as a Vaishnava by delivering all the sons of Prajapati Daksha, enabling them to return home back to Godhead. Very interesting verse and purport. Vinaishtribhira muktanam amimam sitakarmanam bhigatashayasa papa lokeyorubayo kritaha. So, Daksha actually has a good point here. Very good point. And let's make a reference to one particular literature that's very popular with devotees nowadays. It's called the Manusmriti. Anyone's heard of that book before? Manusmriti, Manusamhita. And in the Manusamhita, it states that if one takes the liberation, that means one takes the Krishna consciousness, basically, or liberation, any type of liberation, without fulfilling these particular obligations, he goes to hell. So here we find Narada Muni disobeying the injunction of the Manusamhita. And actually, we talked a little bit about this last night, not in regard to the Manusamhita, but in regard to different Vedic injunctions that deal with the three modes of material nature that are for different persons in different situations. So one injunction doesn't fit everyone. What do they say? Different shlokas for different folks. You know, everybody has a different shlok that's applicable and it's applied by the spiritual master. So let's talk a little bit about these three types of debts. So one pays his debts to the great saints, but what does it mean becoming a brahmachari? That you serve the great saints. Brahmachari gurukule vasandanta guroritam. Of course, we also recommend that one should serve the spiritual master, great saints. We're not denying this. And actually, it's interesting that the Savalashras and Haryashvas also did serve a great saint. So they did pay the debt to the great saints. How? By serving Narada Muni, by following his instructions. Interesting, isn't it? So they didn't neglect that particular type of debt. So the second type of debt is the debt to the debt to the demigods. And, of course, Krishna says if one doesn't repay the demigods for everything they're doing, the rain and everything like that, they're sinful. It's sinful. However, if we water the root of the tree, as the example is given by Srila Prabhupada and the Acharyas, then we don't have to water the individual leaves. In other words, if you serve Krishna, then actually you're serving the demigods. And the proof of that, or you're protected from the demigods' wrath, because the reason you should serve the demigods, because if they get angry with you, you're in trouble. So we're protected from the demigods' wrath by serving Krishna. And the proof of that is the Govardhan pastime. And the Govardhan pastime, you had Nanda Maharaj and the coward men. They wanted to do some service for one particular demigod. His name was Indra. And Indra provides the rain. And Krishna dissuaded Nanda Maharaj from performing that particular sacrifice by utilizing different philosophies. One philosophy was very interesting. It's called the Karma Mimamsa philosophy, in which Krishna said, basically, even if there are demigods, they just have to obey the laws of karma. They have no independent authority in anything. So who cares about these guys? So anyway, so Krishna was basically trying to insult the demigods or insult Indra to prove that you just have to worship him and not the demigods. So, and of course, in the Bhagavad Gita, it also says, you know, the worship of the demigods is avidhi purvakam. It's not the proper methodology. And so what happened is Indra got very angry, and you all know the story. Indra tried to kill all the residents of Vrindavan by inundating them, and Krishna just very nonchalantly, that means peacefully without being in anxiety, picked up Govardhan Hill, with the left hand, with the pinky of his left hand, and saved all the residents of Vrindavan and taught Indra a good lesson. And this proves the point that one doesn't have to worship the demigods. It's very interesting. I do a lot of preaching in places where there is worship of demigods. There's a country called Fiji, which Rishishri knows about. That's where we met, right? Fiji. So Fiji is a lot of people from India, they worship the demigods. And what happens is that when one family member joins the Krishna consciousness movement, the other ones get very upset because the devotee is neglecting the demigods. And what happens is if that devotee happens to get sick or have an accident or something like that, the family will blame it on the lack of worship of the demigods. You're not worshiping the demigods. And they're really into it. So in preaching Krishna consciousness, sometimes we have to just look the other way as they put 1,001 demigods on the altar. Actually, 33 million of them. But anyway, so they don't put them all on the altar. That's why I tell them sometimes, it says if you want to worship the demigods, I give you permission, but you have to put all 33 million of them on the altar. There's this story in the Mahabharata, before we get back to Fiji, there's a story in the Mahabharata about this one guy. He wanted to worship a demigod that nobody else worshipped. And that way he would become very rich. You know, obviously, if you have a demigod that everybody worships, like you go to Lord Shiva, you know, everybody's worshipping Lord Shiva, everyone's worshipping Ganesh, everyone's worshipping Durga. And so they may not even know your name. Just like if you get initiated by a guru who has 50,000 disciples, you know, he'll have to look up on his database to figure out who you are. You know, just match you with your picture. Anyway, so eeny, meeny, miny, mo, which disciple of you are you? Anyway, he figured, you know, I want to worship someone who doesn't have any other worshippers. And so he was looking around, looked up in the cloud, and found the cloud. This is a story from the Mahabharata. Anyone heard this story before? You might have heard it. I've told this already. He looks up, and he sees a cloud, and he says, oh. So he begins to offer obeisance to the cloud. You know, namo, namo, cloudaya, namaha. You know, whatever the word is in Sanskrit. I don't know the name of the cloud. Maybe somebody does. Anyway, so, and then he gets blessed by the cloud, and becomes very rich and very happy. So, actually Krishna says in the Gita, quickly one gets results from worshipping the demigods. But it's not recommended because the fruits are limited, the fruits are temporary, and ultimately, if you go back to join the demigods, what Shine Punye Marcha Lokam Bishanti, yeah, and the demigods are in anxiety, and we mentioned yesterday the demigods are also prisoners in this material world. Sometimes they... Indian people could hardly understand if I say demigods are prisoners. But they're also prisoners in the material world. So what I do in Fiji, getting back to Fiji, is I tell them, yeah, or if you're so attached to all these demigods, and the altars look like, let me give an example you would figure out. In America, I'd say it looks like Times Square in the middle of the day. Anyway, Times Square is in New York. You know, it looks like the railway station during rush hour. And so it's just like all these. So I say, if you want to, all right, you're attached to them, and somehow or other, put them on a lower level than Krishna, and don't offer to them directly. Offer to them the remnants of Krishna, like they do in Bhubaneswara. Bhubaneswara is the capital of Orissa, the state of Orissa, and it's right near Jagannath Puri. And Jagannath Puri, of course, they worship who? Does anyone know? No one knows. Lord Jagannath. Just seeing if everyone's sleeping. Lord Jagannath Baladev and Subhadra. So what they do in Jagannath Puri is they take the remnants of Lord Jagannath Baladev and Subhadra and they transport them in a taxi every day to Bhubaneswar so Lord Shiva can have his food. And Lord Shiva loves Mahaprasadam because we know from the Chaitanya Mangal that, first of all, Narada Muni was serving Lord Vishnu, serving Lakshmi, and finally he gets the Mahaprasadam from Lord Vishnu by the blessings of Lakshmi. He starts dancing ecstatically. Lord Shiva sees him and says, "Did you save any Mahaprasadam for me?" And what happens is that Narada Muni said, "No, I forgot." And he looks under his fingernail, finds a little bit of Mahaprasadam, gives it to Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva starts dancing ecstatically, destroying the universe. You know, there's a ton of inertia. And then Durga says, "Stop, you're destroying the universe. All my children are in danger." And she asks him, "Why are you dancing so ecstatically?" He said, "I got some Mahaprasadam." And she says, "Did you save any for me?" And he says, "No. You're Maya." Which is true. She is Maya, you know. You're the illusory energy. And she got really angry. So it's interesting, even Durga, the wife of Lord Shiva, gets angry at him. So it's bona fide for wives to get angry at husbands. It's the cyclic succession. So anyway, if you're a member of the Rudra Sampradaya. So she performs austerities, Lord Vishnu appears, and then because of her austerities, we all get Mahaprasadam, according to the Chaitanya Mangal, isn't it? And we get Mahaprasadam because she asked Lord Vishnu not only to give her Mahaprasadam, but to give Mahaprasadam to all of her children, and we are her children. So we got Prasadam by the mercy of Durga. So anyway, so what I do is I tell the devotees in Fiji, yeah, keep your demigods. And people, they're really attached to demigods. And even they have, we're going to get onto the Petris in a second, but even they have this two-week period called Deva Paksh. Anyone's heard of that? Anyone's been in Fiji or working with people from India? No. That's a two-week period where you worship the demigods. You don't worship Krishna. You don't do anything else except worship the demigods. You know, it's just my God, it comes every year, and they get into all these rituals, and forget it. Anyway, so I don't worry about the demigods, except I respect them. Of course, we find from the offenses on Chani, the second offense, of course, is to think that the names of the demigods like Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma are equal to or independent of the holy name of Lord Vishnu. Well, actually, the Acharyas explain the offense in another way, to offend or blaspheme the demigods. So we shouldn't blaspheme them. And I do, even in my altar at home, or on my altar at home, I keep a deity of Lord Shiva, who is meditating on Krishna. It's nice. So you can say, I'm a demigod worshiper too. But I am worshiping him as a devotee. So you can worship the demigods as devotees in the proper mood and give them prasad. Okay, so the final debt is, this is actually very interesting to the Petris, that means your forefathers. Because forefathers doesn't mean four fathers. That means your ancestors, your parents, and grandparents, and great-grandparents, and uncles, and aunts, and what else is there? And whatever you have. A mother-in-law. You know, whatever. Father-in-law. What are so many mother-in-law stories? So you do have an obligation to what? How do you fulfill that obligation? By actually doing pinda. Pinda is something that's offering to the forefathers on a certain day of the year. And in Fiji and some parts of India, they also have this two-week period called Pitrapaksh. You know that? Just like I talk about Devapaksh, the two-week period of the demigods, Pitrapaksh, the two-week period of the forefathers. And you got some people so fanatic. I had one lady who's wanted to take initiation for like the last 8 years in New Zealand. And it just so happens I come there during that two-week period. And she said, I can't do it during David Box or Peter Box. I can't take initiation. I said, well, why? Because I'm supposed to serve the forefathers. I said, and then I argue with her. I say, but you're serving your children. You're serving your cooking for yourself. You're serving your husband, aren't you? Yeah. Why can't you serve Krishna during those 2 weeks? Well, it's Peter Box. Anyways, it's so illogical. So, anyway, so the pinda ceremony is done by the putra or putri. Putra means the son who saves the family or saves the forefathers from hell. Put means hell. Tra means liberate. Like we have mantra. You understand? Kshatriya. Mantra means you liberate your mind by chanting Hare Krishna. And kshatriya means someone who liberates others from danger, protects others, basically. So, therefore, there's a lot of these different ceremonies that are performed. Sometimes, some parts of India, they perform it on the anniversary of the person who departed. And in Fiji, they actually offered to the person whatever they liked when they were on the Earth planet. It's almost like ghost worship. In other words, just to make it a little humorous, if the person liked to smoke cigarettes, they put a plate out with cigarettes on it. And then the ghost would come and light up a cigarette or something and smoke a cigarette. And, that's how they celebrated. And there's an interesting story in the Mahabharata, some of you heard before, about this paying the debts to the Pitris. And this is a story that actually relates to the whole Mahabharata story. This is, once upon a time, there was a great sage. His name was Jatukarna. And Jatukarna didn't do this particular ceremony to worship his pitas. And also, he didn't do another thing, which is really important, because to worship the pitas, you have to have children. Why? Because after you stop doing this pinda, you die, you got to have someone else to continue the ceremony. Because the pitris remain in Pitri Loka, which is like Hawaii. You know, it's not like Slovenia, where it's cold and sometimes hot. Hawaii is like the perfect place. It's a celestial planet called Hawaii. Not really called Hawaii, but it's like Hawaii. So you keep your forefathers in this place by paying the bill. Let's use the example. Let's say if you have a parent and the parent has to go into a care facility, a private care facility. You know what those are? They have public care facilities. Forget about it. Don't send your parents to them. It's like sending them to hell. But they have these private care facilities where they have, you know, swimming pools and exercise rooms and everything, like for old people. And the old people are even dancing with each other. There's this one dance they do. It's called the Hokey Pokey. You never heard about that before? One time we were... Many years ago, our temple was right next to a place that functioned as a care facility. It was in Miami Beach. And we'd watch all the old people dance with each other. It's a type of dance where you do put your right foot forward and your left foot back. You ever heard this? And you do the hokey pokey. So, you know, for old people. So the point is, if someone goes to these private care facilities, you have to pay the bill. It's not the government pays the bill. And as soon as you stop paying the bill, guess what happens? They kick the old guy or the old girl out of the care facility. So Pitri Loka is something like that, except there's one difference, is you don't go there with your old bodies. these extended care facilities, you're there with your old body, and it looks like a bunch of prunes dancing around. You understand prunes? You know what a prune is? A prune is like, there's a fruit called a plum that's really nice and round, and then when it gets older, it becomes like shriveled. So, like me. So anyways, that's why we're taking so many herbal medicines. Anyway, so in the Pitri Loka, you know, you get sort of like a young form. So you're enjoying, and your not your ancestors, but your children or grandchildren are paying the bill. And so you're enjoying, and you want them to keep paying the bill. So, get back to the story of Jatakarna. Jatakarna was walking through the forest, chanting his rounds, I guess, being really happy. I'm a brahmachari, not entangled in this world. Don't have to spend much money. Life is easy. You know, he's just like, ch-ch-ch. He was really blissful. And then he runs into these people who are hanging. This is like a metaphorical story. Means, proves a particular point. These people who are hanging upside down over a hole, and a rope is holding them up, and a rat is eating the rope, and they're getting ready to fall into this big ditch and be lost forever. And he goes and he sees these people and he says, how did you get there? You know, what? Why are you suffering like this? And they say, the reason we're suffering, the reason this rat is eating this thing, the reason we're going to fall into a pit is because we have a descendant. Descendant means, you know, child or a child of a child or something like that. Someone in the family who comes after you. Our descendant has not been performing pinda, and he's not having any children, so there's not going to be any longevity for us. We're finished. And he says, this is really bad. Who is this descendant who's not doing it? Please tell me his name. And they say, his name is Jatakarna. He said, oh, that's my name. Oh, my God. Life has suddenly become much more complicated because I have this obligation. And so he thinks, all right, now I got to get married. All these years of blissful brahmachari life, and they're ending. So it's like, oh, my God. Can't stand it. So anyway, so what he does is he says, all right, I make a deal with you all. I will only marry someone who has the same name as me. He thinks, I got it. Never going to find a girl with that name. So he goes, and they agree, okay. And so he goes on his way. And finally, I guess, he says, one last chance. Is there any girl there named Jatakarna? It just so happens that there's a girl born into the Naga family. Heard the story before? Yeah, you heard the story. And because I've told it, but it bears telling again because it's part, you know, it illustrates the point here. So there's a girl born into the Naga family, and she's the either daughter or sister of Vasuki. And Vasuki is a snake, of course. A nice snake. Not all snakes are bad. Some of them are good. You know, Shesha is kind of nice. He's Balaram. Anyway, so he brings forth his sister. He says, yes, I got a girl for you. And her name is Jatakarna. And he goes, oh. Spoiled. And then he says, all right, I'll get married to her. Here's another condition. If I marry her, if she does something that I disagree with, I'm leaving immediately. And so they think, boy, this guy has a lot of conditions. So they arrange the marriage. This is actually the opposite of Shantanu and Ganga Devi. you know, that he couldn't disagree with her. Now she can't disagree with this Jatakarna. So one day he sort of is sleeping through his sanja for Brahman to sanja practices, you know, the times of the day, you know, morning, midday, evening, very important. And she's thinking, I have to help him. So she says, dear, wake up. And he goes, ah! He's been looking for an excuse his whole life. And he says, okay, hasta la vista. That's Spanish for see you later, you know. So then he leaves her, and as he's leaving, she says, but you were supposed to give me a son. And he says, yes, Astika, you know. So they have a son. She has a son later on. That son actually is the one who interferes with the Sarpa Yagya of Maharaj Janamajaya. Maharaj Janamajaya is the son of Maharaj Parikshit, and he was attempting to kill all the snakes. And that son, being a Brahmin, because he has a Brahmin father, was the one who actually comes in right at the time when Takshika is going to be put into the fire along with Indra, who was protecting him. But that's another story. So, therefore, in the in the Vedic system, and here we're talking about the Vedic system, the Pindah ceremony is considered extremely important. So, what do we do about that? Well, the point is that when one becomes Krishna conscious, then one liberates all of his forefathers. There's some injunctions, say, 10 generations, 11 generations, horizontally. That means your aunt, your uncle, your second aunt, and your second uncle, or whatever. They all get liberated because you're a devotee. I remember I utilized that statement quite a bit when my mother kept telling me I had to come back home. After I joined the Krishna Consciousness Movement, she said, your duty is to serve me and become a doctor. And I said, I am serving you. You're going to get Krishna consciousness. She said, I don't want Krishna consciousness. I said, you're going to get it whether you like it or not. And I still tell her that today. I say, you know, she's 91 years old. I said, I'll take care of you and I'll make sure that you're Krishna conscious. Oh my God. I will take care of myself. But basically, because I'm somehow or other engaged in Prabhupada's service, my family is liberated. Mother, father, all these people liberate. So I've actually done my duty towards them. And of course, it's up to them to become Krishna conscious. It's not that they're automatic. When I talk about liberation, okay, we got to be specific about this. It doesn't, that means liberation from karma, given the opportunity to perform devotional service, but they have to choose. It's not that they're dragged, kicking and screaming back to the spiritual world. You know, because what would they do there? You know, I don't want to go there. No, you're going back to Godhead. I don't want to hear Krishna's flute. No, you're going to hear Krishna's flute. I don't want to dance with Krishna. You are going to dance with Krishna. Get out there and dance. Can you imagine that? You know, one of the coward boys, I don't want to play with that Krishna. You know, I want to play with my mobile phone today. There's no mobile phones here. Let me get out of here already. So that's why you can't have any material desires to go back to Godhead. Because you wouldn't be happy. You know, where's my girlfriend? Well, Krishna has all the girlfriends. So therefore, that liberation means they become liberated from karma, but they have to choose to become devotees. Just like all of you are liberated here. Some of you are making quick advancement. Like Ananta, he's very advanced. He's completely surrendered. Right? Some of you, he's just completely surrendered. And some of you are making very slow advancement. Although everyone here is liberated. You chant Hare Krishna, Namabhas, you're liberated. You go see Lord Jagannath at the Rathiatra, you're liberated. Put yourself under the wheel, don't do that. But you get liberated. But you have to really decide that you want to please and serve Krishna. And that's real liberation. And that's the liberation that Narada Muni gave to Daksha's sons. In Narada Muni's discussion with Daksha's sons, he actually showed them, or proved to them, that their real father was not Daksha. That was one of the discussions he had in a metaphorical sense. Their real father was Krishna and the spiritual master. And so Daksha's sons were actually serving their parents. The real parent is Krishna. You understand? So they didn't neglect the service to the parent. So, any questions or comments about these things? Questions, comments, problems, issues? No demigod worshippers here? No? No questions? Yeah.
Daksha, he said that he is concerned that they won't have good life in this life and the next.
Yes.
What does he mean by the next? Because Narada Muni means by the next life that they're going back home, back to Godhead. Mm. So is Daksha thinking the same thing? Or?
Well, Daksha's thinking several things. First of all, they haven't yet had an opportunity to enjoy. So sometimes when one, this is an interesting point, when one has not had the opportunity to enjoy, you can always be lamenting about what I lost. I took sannyas when I was so young. And no babies. One has to be convinced before taking sannyas that there's no enjoyment in this world. That's really important. If one takes sannyas prematurely, then one is going to be looking at others thinking, what did I do? Like that. So, and sometimes for certain people, it's necessary to go on the pravritti marg first. You know, the pravritti marg is the marg of enjoyment. But regulated enjoyment. It's not that, all right, let me just pig out and become renounced. If that was the case, then pigs would be the most renounced sannyasis later on in life. Imagine a pig with a danda, you know. What's your name? Pig Maharaj. Oink. So therefore, but under regulated sense gratification, yeah, people need that. There's a time in life for everything, especially when the senses are very strong. When you're young, the senses are very strong. You know, the whole world looks attractive. And so, anyway, there's an interesting story in the Bhagavatam that comes to mind in that regard. It's the story of Yayati. Yayati, you know the story?
Yes, you want to
trade his. Yeah, so let's try to tell the story really, really quickly. All right. Yati had a wife. Her name was Devyani, and she was the daughter of Shukracharya. Shukracharya was the priest or spiritual master of the demons. And she also came with her friend, Sarmishta, who, anyway, was her friend. But she was warned, or Yayati was warned not to have any relationship with Devyani's friend, Sarmishta, by her father. By Devyani's father, who was Shukracharya. And so this king, Yayati, he did have a relationship with her, and he had some children by her. And Devyani, Shukracharya's daughter, got really upset with her husband. And what did she do? She went to her father and said, Dad, this husband, he's a rascal. And the father, being controlled by the daughter, which is normal. Actually, fathers are often controlled by the daughters. The father said, all right, I curse him to become an old man immediately. So from youth, because at that time people lived a longer time, their youth lasted for longer, not just like for 20 years. You know, after 40, it's all over. It's all downhill from there after 40. So he became an old man, and then, but he still had all the desires. The desires just don't go away just because you get old. You know, I'm not going to tell the story about the guy in the hospital. That would take too long. So he had still had the same desires, and he was lamenting. And his daughter was also, his wife, Devyani, was also lamenting because she couldn't enjoy with her husband anymore. He's just an old man. I mean, how can you enjoy if you marry an old man? Unless he has money. So, you see that in the case of certain political persons who married a model from Slovenia. But anyway. Right? I mean, that's the way to enjoy. Got to have at least money or youth, one of the two. So, she was upset, and so Shukracharya, her father, said to Yayati, okay, I acted a little prematurely, so you can have your youth back if you find one of your sons agreeable to exchange their youth. So he went around to his sons, and one finally agreed, and he exchanged youth, and Yayati became young again, you know, and he was enjoying with his wife, and after some time, he did get a little frustrated, and he said to his wife, he told her a story just to illustrate their predicament. He said, once upon a time, there was a goat, and that goat saw a she-goat in a well, and he rescued the she-goat from the well, and the she-goat fell in love with the male goat, and they got married. And what happened is this male goat had a relationship with another she-goat, and the she-goat's master cut off the male goat's testicles, and then he lost everything, and then they were reattached, and then he enjoyed. And he said, basically he was telling his wife, we're just like goats. I mean, after a while, enjoying the senses, you just think about it. I mean, not just male-female relationship. I mean, even eating. One time I was at a temple one time in the prasadam room, the devotees were eating, and one of the devotees said to me, don't say anything, just listen. And I was listening. He says, doesn't that sound like you're in a barn? So, because they were eating prasadam. But it sounds like they're in a barn. So, you know, it takes away the romance of eating. When you actually understand the reality of eating. And so, you know, sometimes I tell devotees, if you ever want to see who your actual spiritual master is, go to a mirror, stick out your tongue, and there's your Guru Maharaj. Because you're following your tongue, you know. Like, Dharmadeya Vayati, Lobamoya Sudurmati, Takechita, Katina. You know, the tongue is most voracious. Jiwa. So, after a while, you realize, you know, that punak, punas, char, vita, char, vananam, right? Chewing the already chewed. I've done this before, seen it, done it, been there. Time to renounce Hidibo. But some people need that to go through that. And some people don't. Some people just hear, material world is suffering. Hidibo, it's suffering. I have full faith it's suffering. Don't need to try it out. Fire burns, okay. I believe it. Because you said it, Krishna. But other people, fire burns? I don't know about that. Try it out. So it's like you know, so we see certain things. Like sometimes you go, like I just mentioned before, you go on the airplane and you see all these advertisements for these different places, like when things you can go to Alaska and see the icebergs, you know, just ice cubes. So I say you just take a glass and look at the ice cubes in the glass, you get the same experience. You don't need to go there. But you read about these things, you know, oh, I want to experience this. I want to see the Leaning Tower of Pisa. What's that? It's like when I travel around, devotees want to take me to all these places, you know. Would you like to see Big Ben? That's in the UK, in case you... That's a clock in the UK. Did you know that? It's a big clock. Would you like to see the changing of guards at Buckingham Palace? So what for? What's so interesting about this world? And some people think it's really interesting. They have what's called a bucket list. You ever heard of that before? A bucket list means a list of all the places and things they want to do in this lifetime.
Before they kick the bucket.
Yeah, that's why it's called bucket list. And so, if one's an intelligent, you know, there's two ways of learning. One is by doing, one is by hearing. And, you know, hearing is better, but, you know, sometimes not everybody learns by hearing. You've got to have complete faith. Like if the spiritual master says, that's a rope, that's a snake. Okay, snake, rope, snake, rope, snake, rope. So, that's complete faith. But because, you know, Shraddhana Puracha Dharma Shasha Parantapa Prapyamam Nibartante Ritu Samsaravartane, because we don't have that much faith. So sometimes we have to try things out. And so, you know, try it out. That's okay. It's an authorized process. As long as it's done under the rules and regulations, you try it out. And say, 50 years later, you say, yeah, that sannyasi was right. What I've been doing the last 50 years. Oh, my God. Actually, better late than never. So, anyway, it's a renunciation class. So, yeah.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
My question is regarding, you said that Narada Muni said that that actually Krishna
is the father. He gave a story, a metaphor, you know.
And a spiritual master also in that way.
Yeah.
So my question to you is, what is your relationship with Prabhupada now?
What is my relationship? I'm a disciple of Prabhupada. He's my father, and I'm doing pinda by serving Prabhupada. Except every day we have to do pinda to serve Prabhupada, because it's a debt. Actually, Prabhupada said, this is interesting, thank you for reminding me that, of what I'm thinking of right now. Prabhupada said the debt to the spiritual master is an eternal debt. You can pay off the debt to the forefathers, you can pay off the debt to the demigods and the sages. Those can be paid off. Just like if you pay off, you know, buy a house, you get a mortgage, you have mortgages here when you buy a house. Then you get a sign from the bank. It says, this is all paid off. It's all yours now. Well, guess what? With a spiritual master, you never get a certificate saying you paid your debt. You got to pay eternally. Wow, that's frightening. No, it's not. It's ecstatic. So, yeah, so we have a debt. So I have a debt to Prabhupada. And of course, I'm not thinking of it. Oh, I have a debt I got to pay. Oh, my God. It's like the story of Faust, where you enjoy in this lifetime, you sell your soul to the devil, and then you go to hell eternally. You ever heard that story? It's not like that. But you enjoy in this lifetime, and you enjoy eternally, because paying off the debt is kevalananda kanda. It's always blissful. I want to pay off the debt because it's fun. I'm having so much fun, it's almost illegal to be a devotee. Isn't it? I mean, it's fun. If you're not having fun, you're not serving properly. You should have fun, Krishna consciousness, like you want Sankirtan. It's fun. It's so much fun. You're smiling and ecstasy. That's, isn't it? I mean, those who went on Sankirtan, wasn't it fun? It was so much fun. Because sometimes you forget how much fun it is in the morning when it's time to go out again. And the Sankirtan leader has to push you out of the van. You were smiling yesterday. Yeah. But when I slept, I got into ignorance. So, it's fun. Serving Krishna in any way. Even cleaning Krishna's toilets is fun. In the toilets of the temple. It's fun because you're doing it for Krishna. I remember when I joined the movement, that was one of the first things they had me do, cleaning the toilet and cleaning the pots. And I'd never done that before in my whole life. When my mother asked me to do it, I refused. I was completely rebellious with my mother. She even asked me to put my dirty clothes in one place. And instead I just threw them around. So I was going, I still do that. So those who, devotees who clean up after me know that. Anyway, so with Prabhupada, as soon as I joined, I did things that I never wanted to do my whole life, like cleaning pots, cleaning bathrooms, cleaning my clothes and the other brahmacharis' clothes. Can you imagine? Here's this guy who never cleaned a clothes in his whole life, having to clean all the brahmacharis' clothes in the washing machine. And I did, and I was happy. I says, wow, this is blissful. Let me scrub those pots. I'm cleaning my heart. Of course, that's a typical thing they tell you to get you into the pot room. You're cleaning your heart. Let's make it shine. You're making your heart shine. So that's a debt. Yeah, that's a debt we have to the spiritual master. And that's really my relationship, that I'm just cleaning the pots forever. It's not bad. Instead of cleaning the heart, cleaning the pots. So, and I love Prabhupada. If you love someone, really love them, then you serve them, and you're happy serving them. I mean, even going back to Godhead doesn't even concern me at this point. I just think, if I can serve Prabhupada eternally, then that's perfection. I mean, going back to God, if Krishna wants, you know, whatever. As long as I can serve Prabhupada there. So that's the relationship. So, and then you're already back to Godhead if you have that relationship. There's no question, you're Jivan Mukta if you have that relationship. Because that's it. You don't have to have material perfection. You know, sometimes devotees think you have to have material perfection. Be able to memorize every verse in the Bhagavatam or something like that to go back to Godhead, or do every yoga posture, what else? Play every instrument. I don't know what other type of material perfection people expect. Be able to fly an airplane or dress the deities nicely.
Build the rocket.
Build rockets, yeah, dress the day. You know, some things I can't do well. You know, I know that when I used to dress the deities, the pujari would come in and redress the deities after me. But that doesn't mean anything. I did. I just cried. Anyways. So anyway, the main thing is you have to just consider yourself Gopi Bharata Padakamala Dasa Dasa. That's your identity. And that's perfection. That's perfection right there. It's nothing like esoteric. Perfection is your servant of a servant of a servant of the Lord who maintains the damsels in Vrindavan. I think we have to end now because it's time for prasadam, right? We have to offer prasad to our forefathers. Okay. All glories to His divine grace, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai.